So I'm not quite last, but probably least. Because then we have the questions. But I'll try and do, I'll have to echo a couple of things Catherine said, but I'll try and do again the more of the standard setter thing. So we could flip one. You need to stand up here and do it? Okay, don't move. So this is important, and Catherine made an interesting comment that archival and experimental maybe were more reliable than the perceptual and the survey that we often rely on, and whether that's probably true, but I think all four can be really valuable. We are going into a PIR, and we really value the robustness and the carefulness and the efforts of academics. So I want to thank Martin for working on this topic for us, because we're going in for all three standards. And as Catherine has pointed out, there may be some interactions there, 11, 12, that weren't picked up, but we won't kind of go into that. So we want to assess how well the standard's working. It needs to be evidence-based. Research is certainly an important contributor. And we're much more small-c Catholic. Like, if you don't get a significant result on your prime hypothesis, we don't care it's evidence. If it's more descriptive, we don't care. We just want evidence. So when you work for us, we're going to take it as long as you've not got some sort of fatal flaw. So if we could flip one more. So I think Catherine gave these as well, but what the fundamental question is, are we getting more appropriate classifications of subsidiaries to consolidated statements? And sort of a secondary one are they more informative? The kind of primary conclusion was that IFRS 10 was associated with consolidating fewer subsidiaries and a decrease in the likelihood of firms consolidating non-majority owned. And that's interesting. This is helpful. I think, and I'll have some comments, I think there's more that can be done, though, for us to actually use this in a way that really influence our decisions, and I'll go through them. And Catherine raised a couple of them, but one of the problems that we face is there's at least three things driving the number of subsidiaries or whether you're consolidating this non-controlling type of investment. And one is simple economic conditions, and Catherine pointed out we're in a less positive world when we go into the post period. And there's a billion reasons for changing, either acquiring, disposing, or simply changing your ownership. And all of those things could drive stuff. So it'd be nice if we could, you know exactly which ones are purely economics. And then there's a second class where there's some economics, but it's sort of interacted with the accounting, and the accounting makes you actually do something economic. I actually get rid of the subsidiary because I don't like what the accounting's doing. Right? And again, so identifying those ones would be nice. And then the last one is when the entities largely stayed the same, but the accounting is actually driving a somewhat different classification. So, and that's the one I find the most interesting, which is actually in here. If you had an entity that had an investment somewhere between 20 and 50%, is it getting consolidated? Do they switch it? That's the subset that I think speaks most to that initial question up here, which is the appropriate classification. So all the rest is interesting, but I think to us that group, if we can hone in on that group, that would be helpful. So we could flip it. Catherine covered a lot of the pairs. I'm going to do one small thing, though, and I actually had a slightly different interpretation of Table 6. Table 6 is kind of table 3, which is the number of subsidiaries and the number of the consolidation of the non-majority. And what I did was, and I took this as a small positive for the standard. The yellow is the main effects on leverage and stuff, and this would be the effect of these incentive variables in the pre-period. And if you take a look on the subcount, all of those incentive variables are significant. Leverage, good for, CEO ownership are all positive and significant. Loss is negative and significant. So it says it does something about the number of count of subsidiaries. On the non-majority, 2, 3 out of the 4 are significant. Leverage isn't, it's positive. then big four is negative and significant, C ownership is negative and significant, and loss is positive and significant. And where I did something just slightly different was I simply, for the post period, I added the coefficient and the interaction, right? So if you add leverage 0.105 and add that one, you get 0.056. And I didn't have the variances and covariances, but I kind of eyeballed it. And what we get is all of the influences fall in the post period. They all fall. And I would say that in my eyeballing it, that you kind of had leverage as maybe marginally significant. This is probably still significant, but less influential. I think this is probably not significant. This one's probably significant. But for sure, the influence falls. And then over on the other side, all three, I think, become non-significant. This is probably non-significant. So the one thing I did kind of take out as maybe a positive is that, and I agree, Catherine raised a whole pile of things, but on balance, if the standard's really working, it might kill off incentive variables. What's driving it maybe is simply they're doing the accounting right. Maybe the accounting's clear. There's less room for maneuver. I don't know that's true, but it's at least something. Groucho Marx would say. Okay, if we go to the next one. But I think what I really want to stress is opportunities where I think you can maybe go back and look and help us with our work. So one thing that I thought was interesting was just sorting out the sample a little bit. And I think, again, I would try, if we can get in kind of within firm analysis and just tidy up some of this stuff. So you've got people could be in there simply because there's people entering or leaving because you have a big pile without data. So are some firms in and out because of the data? I think this is a smaller risk, but some could simply be in and out of the 500. Again, this was the whole issue of, are they doing it for economic reasons? Can we kind of isolate the ones that are purely economic? And any of these would have little to do with IFRS 10. So if we can focus the analysis better, I think that would help us. So if you flip the thing again, please. So, and again, as I said earlier, I think the place, the best look for where the standard would have an influence is when it's not majority owned, and kind of identify those, and especially ones that are consistently not majority owned over the 4-year period. And you might actually, when you do this, look at people who did change their ownership, and maybe you can attribute, because you've got that, you know, did the standard have an indirect effect on how they perceive things? But I think, again, for our, you know, Catherine suggested that do standard setters really want to consider that? Certainly, if we do, it's second order. The main one we want to do is try and get the accounting right. So these ones are a bit more interesting. And so can you refine the analysis? And could we go one more? One small pet peeve for me personally, I would just understand better and have more confidence if you gave me descriptive statistics and simple correlations. I don't care if editors are telling you not to publish at the end. Cut it when you get to that stage, but leave it in there so I understand, because I just really like to see that stuff. Especially because if we're going to actually rely and have it influence our decisions, that's important. So I want to be comfortable before I do that. So this would be, I think this would kind of going in and following the firm and just trying to get the period to period, especially where you know they haven't changed this sub 50% entity. If somehow you could go and identify those for us, that would be really, really helpful. And again, how material are they? Because that would also, I think, for your big scale empirics, just are they material? Would we actually expect people to value these firms radically differently because they dropped a single subsidiary that was a very small one? And so, or is it just we're getting some other, you know, noise? So some sense of the materiality of these changes would help us again. I think just in table 7, yeah, I was a bit uncomfortable. I'd really like for some of the radical differences between those groups. Is it just kind of an empirical artifact, or is there some theory to justify why they would change so radically? Given that you're hand collecting, how many times were you just short a single variable that maybe somebody could have gone in and got? Because you lose a lot, and you know, there might be a lot of opportunity, and it might be if you decide to go to helping out on sort of those really refined and focused, maybe that's what you'll need to do to get up to a number that you can be more definitive on in helping us. So I think we got to... Okay, flip again. Mm-hmm. Have you already done that?
I've flipped.
You've flipped. Okay, good. Any ahead of me. And then the other one, I think, when we talk about financial reporting choices and accounting influencing managers, not only is this not necessarily a huge material thing, but a lot of them are kind of confusing. I think leverage is reasonably consistent. I think the leverage effect is a consistent one. I think the income effects are not. And so I'd be very cautious with income effects because, A, some people might be in a profit 1 year and a loss. That's one thing. Another one, though, is the way this does is this could... You can improve EBIT or profit or loss because you then take the relative to equity method. So equity method takes it, sucks it right up, goes into EBIT, profit or loss. If you do it this way, the subsidiary is you go all the way down to profit or loss, and then you split profit or loss between the parent, basically, and the subsidiary. So if the bonus plan, for example, is written on EBIT or profit or loss, and you've got a positive earning subsidiary, sucking it in sucks in the whole of the profit and you don't have to allocate the subsidiary, I don't think. And so this one, you know, gets really scary. The other part is if you lose control, and there's actually a big court case in Korea, if you lose control, it triggers a fair valuation of the remaining interest. So if I have 52%, sell off 12, get down to 40, I trigger a big fair value gain potentially. And there's actually a big court case in Korea right now if somebody did that. So I'm just saying, the income effect on this gets really messy. And there's also a floor where if you've taken the losses, if taking you right down to zero, then you stop attributing losses. So there's lots of messy stuff on the income. And like, what are you looking at, profit or loss? And again, for the if you're trying to value the stock, you would probably go below profit or loss and look at the attribution to the common shareholders. So I just think this is probably a more reasonable place to look, the leverage one. The income stuff, unless you're into almost a case study, it's going to be very hard to do. And so kind of finally, in conclusion, I'm going to get Anne to do this. So I think it's helpful to know that there is an impact. Based on my little thing, shade more positive than negative, I think, given the evidence, but I think you guys can do more. In particular, though, if you want to go back and if you can try and distinguish these subsidiary changes, understand the motivation for the change, and ideally focus in really where the accounting's having a big impact, that would really be helpful to us. I think you can then do it in your broader empirical tests, but I also suggest if you do get to that level, there's nothing wrong in doing a subset of cases where you actually identify 33 places and do sort of 33 little, for us, again, I'm not sure how journals react, but for us that would be really helpful. Just this is what they did and this is and so on. So, thank you, and we look forward to kind of hopefully seeing more of this because we are doing the PIR and it is so hard to get good evidence. So thanks very much, Martin.